The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
For Friday, July the 23rd, 2021, it's The Brief from WABE. I'm Jim Burris. A Cobb County grand jury has indicted an aspiring rapper on 15 felony counts related to three murders at the Pine Tree Country Club near Kennesaw. In addition to malice and other murder charges, 23-year-old Brian Anthony Roden faces charges of aggravated assault, kidnapping, as well as firearm and evidence tampering offenses. Officials have not released a possible motive. Fayetteville police say they are searching for an armed and dangerous man wanted for child molestation. Police say 34-year-old James Appel could be in North Georgia or North Carolina. They say he's in a gray Volkswagen Tiguan SUV, armed with a handgun and possibly an AR-15-style assault rifle. Police say he left his house a few days ago when they responded to a child molestation and incest report. 30 years after police say he murdered an 8-year-old boy, a convicted sex offender has been arrested for that killing. Roswell police say 56-year-old James Michael Coates of Woodstock is charged with murder and aggravated child molestation in the killing of Joshua Harmon. Police say they arrested Coates after DNA evidence linked him to the crime. Harmon was reported missing in 1988, and his body was later found in a wooded area near his family's apartment. Coates served nearly two decades in prison for child molestation. Georgia Congresswoman Lucy McBath is co-sponsoring a bill to simplify the program that forgives student loans for public service employees. First introduced in the last Congress, it failed in committee. The Public Service Loan Commission program is supposed to erase the remainder of loans for graduates in certain government and not-for-profit jobs who make 10 years' worth of payments. The act makes it easier for applicants to identify eligible employers and to stay updated on the status of their enrollment. The Department of Education has approved fewer than 3% of all applications since the program began in 2007. The end of the Golden Ray could be almost coming into sight. Crews are working on one of the final cuts into the massive cargo ship that's been stuck off the Georgia coast for close to 2 years now. Mark Lanneman reports.
This week, crews started the next-to-last cut into the cargo ship that capsized off the Georgia coast. To remove the car carrier, they've been slicing it into giant pieces and hauling them away. The ship was carrying over 4,000 cars when it capsized off of St. Simon's Island near Brunswick. During removal, there have been obstacles, including oil leaks, fire, hurricane season, and the pandemic. Once removed, the pieces of the ship are taken to a facility for recycling operations. Mark Lanneman, WABE News.
Federal officials announced recently they're tightening security on critical infrastructure like the Alpharetta-based Colonial Pipeline. The move follows a May ransomware attack that shut down the vital fuel pipe. Gas shortages left Georgia under a state of emergency for most of May as panic buying pushed up gas prices across the southeast. For weeks, Nick Santora is the CEO of cybersecurity education company Curricula. That's based in the Atlanta Tech Village. And he says he worked for the federal government for years in critical infrastructure protection, including conducting utility audits. When we spoke recently, he said there are a few simple things almost no company is doing that if they did, it could all but solve incidents like what happened in the Colonial Pipeline case.
You know, when you look at the Colonial Pipeline, yes, of course, there's always going to be security gaps. And our job as security practitioners is to try to reduce risk and minimize the chances of a major impact. Some of the things that happened there were basic hygiene, password reuse, using the same password that was found already on the internet as part of a data breach. A couple things that if you just followed basic hygiene could have prevented the majority of what we saw happen.
Previously, also, you worked for the federal government performing utility audits. How often would you say that any given company or entity would have a breach that could potentially, you know, be something major?
So, yeah, I work for the agency that regulates the power grid in North America, so making sure that when we turn our lights on, they turn on. And I focus on the cyber side. So I was doing audits, investigations, advisory, you name it. And, you know, speaking of just breaches, there's a lot, right? I guess I couldn't tell you an exact number, but there's so much more that happens that doesn't make it to the news because it's not a newsworthy event or it's not being publicized.
We've seen the federal government act on this and the Biden administration implement new standards and processes. What's your reaction to what's being done in Washington?
It's hard, right? It's everything in government is reactionary. So it was just until the past decade or so until this stuff became mandatory and enforceable with $1 million penalties per violation. Now that the government is getting another taste of, well, because the pipeline got hacked, let's go get a little bit more strict on that. It's only as good. So any regulatory or compliance environment is only as good as its enforcement. And yes, you can put rules and regulations and stop signs and speeding signs all up, but if there's no one looking, people are going to do what they're going to do. So I think this is the first step into a better direction, but we are years and years, if not a decade away from seeing any type of actionable difference inside of these industries.
Hearing that scares me. Does it you?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen much worse. So I guess I've been scared my whole career. So I'm kind of like used to it now, but I've taken the red pill and I've seen what is actually happening behind the scenes that most, if not anyone, would ever get to see. So it's better late than never.
Well, now I'm curious, if that's not the worst, what would be an example of something egregious that you've seen?
There's some people that have been operating the power grid for, you know, decades, and they say, hackers aren't going to target us. Like, you're ridiculous. Why are we following these rules? I mean, these are real conversations I would have. So, you know, when you look at that, kind of the future of where this needs to go is that we all need to understand that it's not, you know, a matter of if this could happen to us, it's when. And it's how prepared we are. So some of the things are based off neglect like this. Some of them, especially in critical infrastructure, these devices, these assets, these large pieces of physical machinery, some of them don't have backups. And if something detrimental had happened, you know, you got to order this stuff from Germany. It takes, you know, a year and a half lead time. And there's not enough of those assets just to be sitting in a closet somewhere for, you know, a rainy day.
Do you think the Colonial Pipeline, for example, debacle was a wake-up call, enough of a wake-up call?
It sets a bar for a bare minimum, and it's very easy to check the box for a compliance audit versus actually doing real security work. And there's a clear difference between doing things and doing the right things, which is why I think it's going to take a decade to actually do the right things.
Nick Santora is the CEO of cybersecurity education company Curricula, which is based in the Atlanta Tech Village. Haitians in Georgia said goodbye to the late President Jovenel Moise this week. As Roxanne Scott reports, he was laid to rest today in the northern part of the country.
He left behind him his children, his wife, his friends.
The Haitian president, who was in office since 2017, was assassinated earlier this month in a late-night raid in his home. A memorial for the president was held at the Consulate General of Haiti in Atlanta. Wallis Etienne is vice president of the Georgia-based International Women of Hope. She met Moise in 2016 while he was campaigning in Florida.
Standing next to him, I felt his aura, his presence engulfed with strength.
More than 20 people have been arrested connected to the assassination. Police are still investigating a motive. According to the Migration Policy Institute, an estimated 11,000 Haitian immigrants live in metro Atlanta. Roxanne Scott, WABE News.
Thanks for listening to The Brief. You can find more local news at wabe.org. Lily Oppenheimer is our producer. Kathleen Quillian edited the show. I'm Jim Burris. Have a great weekend.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.